A big deal in 14-year-olds' lives is Andy Warhol or some of the icons of the 60s. Where do they come from? Why does Andy Warhol's art rank there as something to be remembered? Well, if you follow the McLuhan pattern, we know that everything up to television extended our faculties, television in particular extended our central nervous system. And then the humans got together and decided to extend more than their bodies, they extended the planet. So they created a satellite, a rocket ship, where you could get on and live inside of, and it's an artificial, survivable, breathable environment, so it's your habitat, your earthly habitat, turned into an art form that you can live in. So you go into the cold, dark space. Well, what happens after that? Well, after that, the various technologies up to the satellite start extending themselves, and that's the Android meme phase. But just before the digital world comes in, you have a phenomenon called pop art. And McLuhan defined pop art as turning your environment into an art form. So that's what Andy Warhol did. He took his factory, he took whoever showed up, put them on film, and made them an art form. So you can take any particular environment in the 60s, anything you were doing, any range or definition of environment, because it was the content of the whole world becoming an art form under satellite conditions. When the hidden environment of the satellite went around, it turned everything of previous media dynamics into an art form, and eventually an archetype. So in the particular gallery art world that Gutenberg man likes to think and prop up as the output of an original creative genius, hooking up individual creativity as an archetype, in that world, Andy Warhol made a big impact, and John Baudrillard, read him on Andy Warhol. I don't think he says it as precise as I'm saying it, but Baudrillard gets the drift of Warhol turned his environment into an art form. That's why he would have somebody in the factory, in some warehouse, you know, watching TV, having the radio on, all those old media, electric media, where the content of the satellite phase, just filming that showed the environment as an art form, rather than making a painting or making a band or making music. It was the environment as an art form. So, in the analog phase, the effect after the planet became an art form, you then had people creating little unconsciousnesses and taking their unconscious local environment, whatever level, the car they drive, the school they went to, the books they read, and they made a little video or something out of it, a little film, maybe overlaid of special effects, and called that art. And it was art because you were turning your old environment, any aspect of it, into an art form. Well, once the Android meme took over and a flow, a liquid capital started happening in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you had a new level of your environment becoming an art form. That is what I call the mythic stage. So under Android meme conditions, which is post-Andy Warhol, this conscious tendency to turn your environment into an art form now becomes a mythic stage. Now, mythic stage means the whole culture in action. So what you put on as your culture, what technologies you make of, that you use, that you're aware of in your knowable scenario, your clothing, that becomes your mythic stage. So that was the holopathic replay of Andy Warhol's turning environment into art form, which Warhol didn't necessarily understand that he was doing that. He was a friend of McLuhan. Maybe he read McLuhan in the later years. He was influenced by Mechanical Bride in the 50s. They say that on the website of the Andy Warhol Foundation. But did Warhol understand the later phase that McLuhan told him about turning the environment into an art form? And Warhol certainly didn't know about my phase. So if you look in the Croker quadrant, you'll see it's called mythic stage. And you'll see the figure, the archetype that is the human enterprise that is highlighted in that quadrant is the artist. So all that art was, thought it was, and could be is in the Croker quadrant. So we're in the Croker quadrant now explaining how mythic stage is the name of the Warhol phase within the art world that the Android meme makes. So the Android meme includes art, replays human making of art. Warhol was the main figure, the Pope of American art in the 60s and 70s. So you got to have Warhol referred to, so we call it a mythic stage. All right. This is very good stuff I'm telling you. You're the first to hear the explanation of how there is no now, and Ian would say that, but we can look at it technically and prove in our environment by studying the effects. And why did it suddenly become a big impulse for everybody to document their now? because they intuited, or some part of themselves, their being, intuited there was no more now. So they had to start filling in a bunch of nows. They had to start expressing it, propping it up. That pattern has never been said before. That explains better than any other explanation of why Web 2.0 went that way. So in the literate world, they had a battle, a schizophrenia over what was real and what was not real. Generally, it had to be a repeatable experiment, a repeatable result, like the book page, which is repeatable, the same book page in every book. That repeat archetype, cliche archetype, you could say, was the standard for matching between your inner thinking and the outer world. So you had to make your inner thinking match with the outer world defined by laboratory experiments or other authorities coming out of the book culture. Well, you don't have that world anymore where the books are constitutive, are the ground, molding people. See, when people were making the science and matching inner and outer, they didn't know they were miming the book and printing press. It was unconscious. It was only when we get into electric age that people start analyzing the literary unconscious, called linguistics or structuralism, became rampant after World War II, even though there were some earlier versions, thinkers before that. But they were analyzing visual space and logocentric, mouth talk. One of the philosophers called it speech acts. So these guys started to notice the old hidden ground, speech and writing, the printing press. But they weren't talking about the effects of the present, the electric age. So when you get past the literate world, people have to say, well, I don't care about what's real or not. I'm enjoying this movie, the special effects and the improvised virtualities that are offered. What's the matter if it's real or not? I'm experiencing it sensorially. So the battle between reality and lie or truth and illusion was not really applicable after the 1670s. So that's why people got into having experiences via drugs. It didn't matter whether it was real or not, or it was an experience. The category, whether it was real or not, didn't apply. And then when we got into Web 1.0, Web 2.0, reality and those literate terms didn't matter. It was more and more people living like a drug-like experience, just tickling their ganglia, just adopting new scenarios through their senses in a hyper state of panic, paranoia, schizophrenia, hysteria, and ecstasy. So all these variations, which you can see in my chart, of ganglia screaming for connection, that's why I would refer to that reality as myth. Because for literate people, myth is not true. But we're into virtual reality, which is real, but not so real. You can't categorize it as real, but it didn't matter, you couldn't categorize it. So that's why I bring back the word myth to mean all the technologies that you wear as your clothing. In other words, Lena, if you had a car and you had a television, you had an iPhone, all these technologies in your environment that you would work at a job to pay for, including the house, that is your mythic stage. Jacques Ellul said propaganda is the whole culture in action. So your whole culture that you engage in, that you wear environmentally, is your mythic stage. And we say myth not because it's unreal, but because it's comprehensive. Originally, pre-literate myth-making was about making a big, rich pattern that would explain the society, the culture, the tribe's reality to itself. So mythic stage is the technologies you use to define your being. So definitely Iandom is part of your mythic stage because you engage us.
The art world is always a reflex of the present environment.
Yes, and the present environment is technological. It's technology. If you read William Irwin Thompson, and he's made a lot out of the McLuhan phases, that you have a new environment, it's invisible, so therefore the previous environment becomes known. He goes through the history of culture. He calls it cultural ecology, not media ecology. And he talks about the first art form was shamanism or trancing. You had the tribes, when they wanted to experience their previous hidden ground, they would get into whatever weird rituals and trancings that the shaman could evoke in the tribe, because the tribe's present environment was speech and scratching and whatever tools they had. That was their present environment. So they would go back into the unconscious to like their caveman reality, instinctual level, and hoik it up as an art form. So there's a great explanation, and using McLuhan's pattern, of all that weirdness that we see Aboriginal cultures doing, weirdness from our literate point of view, not weirdness from Ion's point of view, it's actually exploring the mystery landscape, as early humans would have known. Now, this would be within fallen humans, not ascended humans. Ascended humans aren't even in the ball game here. We can't even measure and talk about them. So we're just talking about social mortar. That's what we're leading a revolution in. We're going to make a better social mortar world. So look up William Irwin Thompson's book. A good one for this is Imaginary Landscape. Came out about 1989. And you'll see how the primitive instinctual unconscious was the first art form.
Is art not an unconscious because we can see it and are conscious of it changing?
Art is what humans begin to notice or begin to value. See, I have this laid out in my early charts that Bob Marshall made under my tutelage. The first one is the alphabet. The artists of that period, the Phonetic Alphabet, are Plato and Aristotle. So they took the world of tribal, oral, unconscious, and because it became a figure, they turned it into an art form and wrote it out, and it became the content of Plato and Aristotle's books. Aristotle tended more to categorize things. So that unconscious now becomes figure. Everybody starts reading Plato and Aristotle and trying to be a writer and trying to develop concepts of science, not knowing that the present environment, the phonetic alphabet, is making them act that way. They only see the previous environment. But most people don't even know of the previous environment. So art becomes valuable because it makes you see something you didn't notice. It turns out, 3,000 years later, we can say, oh, they were just noticing the past environment. But when art showed up over the last 3,000 years, it was always seen to be new, and it seemed to be explaining the hidden part of the present. You're taught that art is prophetic, or it's a significant. But we learn now, since our advanced technological turnover, that actually it was only an effort by people to retrieve the values of the previous environment that they weren't aware of, and are certainly not aware of why they are retrieving those values. They're not aware there's a new environment making them value the old environment. So let me see. The next one, we had the printing press. That turns Shakespeare and Francis Bacon into an art form, or theater, or Shakespeare starts to take the medieval visual space, which is theatrical. People used to do plays on the steps of the Gothic cathedrals. They were called morality plays, I think. So Shakespeare took that old medieval phenomenon and turned it into an art form with a new kind of theater. But he was only describing the previous environment. He was not aware the printing press made people find theater exciting. So then you get into the Industrial Revolution, industrial technologies. They make, all the private arts, art forms, opera, painting, novels, philosophy, science, every Gutenberg activity becomes an art form, becomes valued and part of the cultural education. Because they're not aware of the effects of the extension of kinetic space, which is industry. They're not seeing that industry is creating a whole new environment that will weaken the painting, the sculpture, the music, the theater, the writing, the science, will weaken them over a period, over a span. Because the real environment, the industrial kinetic space, is doing things that they don't see. So then you come into the electric age. The electric age turns the machine, the kinetic machine, into an art form. So you can look at the constructivists. They were known in Russia at the time of the Russian Revolution. The Dadaists, the Bauhaus, that was a school for architecture and other stuff. The mechanical, the architectural, city planning, the robotic became an art form. So people said, okay, we've had a weirdly violent mechanical environment for a couple hundred years. But now we know how to make machines better, and we can make better housing and better schools and better environments, better cities. That was the dream. And why was that happening? Because the environment, the electric environment, that made everybody a super angel and turned everything into software and made people's cities and new architecture obsolete faster than the Bauhaus could get their architects like Mies van der Rohe and Frank Lloyd Wright and those characters out there being famous for a short while, but by the 1960s, all that skyscraper stuff looked irritating, looked menacing. I remember at the time when the wall went down, the Soviet Union collapsed, the Russians were saying, what the hell, what's wrong with us? Why did we believe in Stalin and Brezhnev and 60 years of this nonsense? Why did we believe it? And see, they were in a new environment, which made them see the old industrial environment of Soviet Union clearly, and it wasn't charismatic anymore. It was like, well, what the heck? Why do we get seduced by it? You know, you could explain to them, well, because it was in a new environment. You were molded that way. You were affected by it. And you wanted to retrieve a medieval kingship with your Stalin because the electric age, first early electric media, cars, telephones, movies in the 1920s made you go that way. But now you're in the android meme way beyond that. So you look back at the 20th century and say, wow, we were all duped by that. See? You get my point there? You can hear it in the Russians. They didn't understand why they were duped. But they were not in that environment anymore. So they can see, well, that environment, look what it did to us. Why did we want that? How could we? Okay, so an example in the electric phase, when mechanization becomes an art form, that's pop art. That would be the environment as art form, the mechanization of speech, the mechanization of photography, the mechanization of all the analog media, is the content of the electronic flow. We've been in a flowing liquid capital environment, you know, since the 70s. And then it became the android meme. So do you see that art, the simple way is art is always putting values into an environment or artifacts that you didn't know were valuable when they were being art and you didn't understand they were art. You thought they were just not behavior, like, you know, take cubism, considered ugly at the time when it first started. Then 50 years later, a cubist painting sells for $60 million or something because you're putting in values back into the past. Now we can see that that was a knee-jerk reaction to larger, bigger art forms, which were the media environments themselves.
Yeah, so we recognize them as rearview mirrors.
The art was always a rearview mirror, but it was a valuable rearview mirror because it made you know as best you could what was happening in your society, even though it was one step back. But that's why people lived a lot slower. Once you get into our time, the rearview mirror becomes obsolete. There's no more art in that sense.
I was just going to ask if Sheila's paintings were the new art form. Like, because hers are like in the new environment, right?
Well, those are propaganda paintings designed by Ion. I don't know why Ion wants the paintings that way. There may be a damn good reason, but I don't know what they are. Sheila is not a revolutionary in art. We don't have revolutions in painting anymore. It's an obsolete medium. You can paint whatever you want. On the art market, people do replays of previous styles or variations. They just make it up. And there's no trends or schools because it's not part of a enlightening. It's not enlightening your unconscious. Like the old rearview mirror. It's not rearview mirror. But I'll suspend my judgment on Sheila's painting and say, well, maybe they are on another level that communicate something of the hexatic or non-physical because they were ordered by Ion, and I respect Ion's wishes.
Would you consider them like cartoons, like hot or cool?
I don't consider them anything. They're sort of interesting, but I hardly look at them. I'm looking at them right now. They're over in the corner there. I never look at them, but I'm not a visual person. I don't look at anything around me. I'm usually involved in the richness of thinking and whatever my tactile reality is engaging. I'm probably in the level of ESP I live in the non-visible. But some people say that Sheila's paintings causes interesting things in their homes. Maybe it caused stuff here I didn't notice. I don't find them something that provokes my thinking like what other environments do. Like Ion provokes my thinking. But I'm glad Sheila did them. I mean, it's good that she followed Ion's orders. That was probably a smart move. But I have no value, no treasuring of them yet. But that's just my personal opinion. I'm not an authority on it. Other people might have all kinds of things to say about Sheila's paintings.